I'm just curious to know about the origins of Sun. And well, let's start with the name. The name, apparently, you know, I was sort of playing with your records here, and I said, "Oh, that's Sun O." And then I had a listener ringing me, said, "The Sun is, the O is silent."
We have very intelligent listeners. They know more than we do.
I said, "Okay, right. I'm sorry about that." And but it comes from a makeup amp, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. We lifted it directly from this brand of amplifier, which I'm sure your father's artists used, actually. They were pretty big in the early 70s and up through about the early 80s.
Can I just say for all the listeners that these two guys, they both look like Roy Wood. Just so that you can visualise what's going on here. They're sitting right next to me, and both of them look just like Roy Wood. They've got the long hair and the frizzy beards and the whole moustache thing.
Let's all of us like it. What do you think Piers looks like then?
Wow.
I don't know. Nobody in particular.
He's going really red now. That's
very English.
Yeah. Very English, yeah, look English.
Back to the amp, anyway. So the O in Sun O, was it just like, what was it supposed to be? Was it supposed to...
Well, it's the logo of the amplifier. It's actually like a, you know, a circle, a filled-in circle with sound. It's like supposed to represent a sound wave, basically.
Yeah, three parentheses coming out.
And, and we just, you know, we could actually figure out the letters or the text to go behind the Sun name for it, so...
But surely it wasn't just an amplifier. I mean, surely it must have been, you saw something beyond the amplifier, I think.
Well, the band was also sort of, the nucleus of the origin of the band was our fondness for the group Earth. So there's also the double entendre of the Sun being in the center of the solar system and the Earth revolving around it. But we kind of switched it around, that we're revolving around the Earth. Sort of old school cosmology, I guess. Yeah. Also just the radiation and the power of the of a star itself is something that can sort of be represented with the sound waves, because we deal with a lot of physical sound pressure when we perform, and it's very much a physical presence as well. Which so I think not only did we rip off our favorite amp, which we use, it has turns out to have a lot more relevance as well.
Exactly.
It's also sort of, I mean, the way it's spelled is with two N's, and you know, having the O and the parenthesis there makes it seem even more alien, which I personally like to think of the group as its own entity, not necessarily made up of the players involved, but just of the moment of creating the sound. So just the presence of the sound itself is the group, not the people. And we do a lot of things to sort of extend that, like wearing costumes on stage, with the
this sense of ceremony that you put into your performances. Like you wear robes, you wear, use quite a lot of dry ice, which I guess sort of symbolizes, I don't know, incense or something in a church or something. You do candles and things.
It's just to fuzz the human level of it out a bit. You know, if you can fill this place with smoke or whatever, people's perception changes automatically, and that even amplifies the amplified sound even more, because not only is the hearing and the sort of physical touch level being screwed with, also the visual.
But it's quite interesting because a lot of the time people actually listen, especially with live performances, people listen with their eyes. Mm-hmm. So when you take away a bit of that, this sound, I mean, the ability to listen, maybe kind of they open their ears a bit more.
It's like if you strip everything down to a level that people are not used to expecting. We play at rock venues, you know, but our music is not rock at all, although we use rock instruments.
How do you describe your music?
Tonal amplified guitar music.
Well, we can hear some of it now.
Yeah, let's hear
some.
This is an unreleased track, anyway, and maybe we could just because I'm so brainless, I forgot the title of it. Could you
the one with Attila?
It was released as a bonus MP3 on a CD recently, but this track actually is rare because it features vocals, and most of our music does not have vocals for, you know, that sort of inhuman presence like I was talking about. But we were lucky enough to be able to work with this Hungarian vocalist named Attila Csihar, who has a very long resume over the past 15 years in sort of like experimental metal music. And he's been someone I've admired for a long time, and so he contributed to this track, and I think he completely elevated the group.
Right.
You know,
okay.
The presence into a different realm. So,
you did have vocalists involved with this recent tour, didn't you, as well?
Yeah, actually, Attila came out from Budapest and performed with us twice in London.
Yeah.
And also Julian Cope performed at one of those performances.
Now, I thought Cope's performance was really very, very well done, really, the way that he just really didn't come on saying, "I'm Julian Cope and here I am singing," you know. He sort of crept on in a way, like, and you couldn't really figure it who it was, even if it was human at all, really, you know, what he was making, just sort of shuffling along like a spider, really, in the, with his
yeah.
torch.
Yeah, it was all on his knees the entire time.
He was excellent, really good.
Yeah. The flashlight was pointing down at the floor.
I thought it worked really well, and, you know, like I said, I mean, I thought both vocal pieces in that concert were just astonishing, really.
Very Thank different, you. Yeah.
How did that come about, the contact with Julian?
Yeah, how did that happen?
He reviewed our second album, Double O Void, on his website, Head Heritage, and somebody pointed me in the direction of it and told me that Julian Cope was freaking out over our album, and I read the review, and it was like, not only was it the most flattering review I'd ever received for anything I'd ever been involved in, but it was really like it was like he was inside my mind, and, you know, and the mind of Sun, and where we were going and what we were thinking, and, you know, like, it was like he was pulling stuff out that, you know, like deep, almost like deep dark thoughts that I had never really expressed to anyone, and here he was writing it in these, you know, in this really super long review. And so at right around the time that came was put on the internet, we had our third album out, Flight of the Behemoth, and I contacted him. I said, "Hey, I'd love to, I'm from Sun, I'd love to send you our new album, maybe you'll enjoy it, you know, maybe not, or whatever." And I sent it to him, and ever since then we've had this really really cool exchange of music and ideas in a way too, and then that's how the collaboration came about. I was just like, me and Steve were like, "Hey, would you like to do something?" We're really kind of into collaborating with different people on every, you know, at every turn, like every album, every recording, doing something different, bringing in different players and stuff. And so I was like, "Oh, maybe we'll ask Julian." We were very honored that he wanted to do it. And because I guess he turns down quite a few people that ask and request to do collaborations. So we were like, "Oh, wow, this is great." And then when he turned in, was just, you know, of course, blew our minds. We were just like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because
so. The track appeared on White One, didn't it? The track you recorded with you.
The fourth record that we put out. Yeah. And then it became sort of the centerpiece of that record.
Right.
Or the first track, rather.
Sure.
He wrote this really long form, almost medieval poem that has incredible Odinist topics going on and a lot of great humor, which
it
is
sounded like something from a Michael Moorcock novel.
Yeah. But it's the lyrics are actually, they sound fantastic, but my wife and I went and visited him in the spring, and he took us on a tour to all of the locations he talks about and introduced me to.
That book is an amazing work.
Yeah. It's incredible,
really.
Yeah.
I think that's probably his finest piece, really, that book.
Yeah.
About the
antiquarian.
You know, the Neolithic sites and prehistoric relics and remains and things that are scattered throughout.
He's got a really cool approach, because in some ways he's like, you know, bringing this ancient energy up, but his like visual aesthetic is totally just garish color and really like stunning.
Yeah,
you know, and his performance at the festival is like that too. It's just like totally a commanding. You cannot not look at it or pay sure. attention to it just from that aspect. So,
what are your opinions of say? I mean, how people would probably bracket you wrong as either, I don't know, metal or stoner rock or one of these other things. I don't really see you as either myself, but I just see you doing something completely different with the rock medium. But what is your attitude to that kind of music as well? I mean, do you listen to a lot of that? Does that influence you in any way? Say, I don't know, Norwegian black metal or something like that?
Definitely. Actually, Attila Chihar is it probably is the jewel in his crown was performing on an album called De Mysteries Dom Satanas uh-huh. by the group Mayhem, uh-huh. which if you've heard anything about Norwegian black metal in your life, you've probably heard about these murders and these church burnings that happen. And that band, one of the guys in the band was the leader of this sort of gang in Norway that was doing this in the early 90s. And he was murdered right after this album was made. Anyway, that album is the classic Norwegian black metal album, mm-hmm. the definitive one, and Attila was the vocalist on it. So,
And he's sort of, to me, I mean, his vocals are completely unique, and mm-hmm. actually, like, they're, I would almost, you know, to simplify it, it's like it's art, and in a lot of the black metal vocals there doesn't seem to be much passion and soul, and a majority, especially what's passing for black
like
metal,
is scattergun spewing. Isn't
well, you
it,
got
really?
Your Cradle of Filth, and you know they've yeah. kind of there's, and you've got the millions of bands that sound like them, and but Attila was it's very passionate what he's doing, and it's very unique. So, you know, it was, you know, obviously an honor to work with him, and then you know put out an album by him as well on our label Southern Lord, but. I would say black metal definitely influences us in a way, as well as any all kinds of music. I mean, even
I guess I knew it did, but I just wondered how deeply it did. You know, I mean,
we're all pretty. Our tastes in music are all really eclectic. I mean, we're all really well. Steve and I, and then the people we collaborate with, especially this guy Rex Ritter that we've been working with. We're all really super into jazz, especially like the late 60s period Miles Davis stuff. I mean,
right.
I would kind of run the gamut of musical tastes. John McLaughlin is yeah. part of that whole, you know, lineage as well, as far as, you know, he played with Miles Davis, obviously. But, as far as the stoner rock goes, I'm really not really interested by any of the thing that passes as stoner rock in that genre. I mean, you know, it's kind of silly.
How about minimalism as well? I just want to ask you about that before we play the next track. I mean, you know, like Lamont Young, those kind of drone people, you know, Terry Riley, people like that who...
I really love...
And the importance of the drone that goes way back to the Velvet Underground, like bands mm-hmm. like that.
The early, or it's like late 60s, those people were doing some really cool mm-hmm. stuff. And Tony Conrad is a hero of mine.
Right.
Completely incredible. And you can learn so much from that just emptiness of structure. I mean, it's invisible structure. It seems like there's nothing there with this minimalist thing, but there is so much density to the sound itself that the structure is much more crystallized rather than linear. And
yeah.
I think in that respect, those musicians from that group of people from New York area at that time really have a lot to offer anyone who's really like using their ears to think, you know, through these through
and
music.
It is really only recently being discovered all that existed, that particular, you know, particular mm-hmm. drone music from those people.
Thank God for Table of the Elements label.
Yes, I'd say that as well, really, yeah. And other people like Quake Basket and things like that
mm-hmm.
for bringing it to our attention. But before we go, I'd just like to ask Greg about Southern Lord, your label, well, the label Southern Lord, and you know the artists that you put out, and just briefly give an ad for it, I suppose. In a way.
Okay. Well, it's Southern Lord started as sort of an avenue to put out Steve and I's music, either stuff that we'd done together or separately, because we both have quite a few projects. Especially Steve has a lot of projects, and And so we've, it's kind of been a workshop for that type of stuff, so to speak, and but it's also expanded into putting out other groups that we find interesting, and other friends as well. But you know, it's sort of the house label for Steve and I's work, and yeah, separately and together, including his band Con8, who just have a new album that was just released called Things Viral that we're going to play a track from here, All the Sun Material, another collaboration that Steve and I did with two British guys, actually, Lee Dorian and Justin Greaves, then that project was called The Teeth of Lions Rule the Divine, stuff like that. Pretty much. I mean, we catalog is expanding, and we try to put out interesting extreme material.
So give the email address so people can log in.
You can just it's info@southernlord.com,
yeah,
or you know, sun@southernlord.com works as well, and the website to check out lots of interesting things on there and more information about Steve and I's projects, including Sun, at southernlord.com.